Hello and welcome to Imps WWE Adventures Podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. You can help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review. You can also give a donation directly through Red Circle and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio with Rich and James, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, and Tunnel Talk. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was. 30 minutes, whether editing me likes it or not. Suck it, future me. 50 minutes, whether recording. Make it 30. Make it 30. And it was a certainly interesting week. We got the aftermath of WrestleMania with things kicking into gear, taking us to the road to Paris. We got advancements on the arguments WWE and AEW, which are absolutely nothing. We got articles humanizing Vince McMahon ahead of things going ahead with the trial, the sex trafficking. So, you know, you got to humanize the potential sex trafficker. You got to do that. Anyway, and moving on from that, we are going to be talking about SmackDown and Monday Night Raw, a slightly different recording location, so hopefully it's absolutely fine. So with that, without further ado, we'll jump over to Detroit, Michigan to talk about the SmackDown after WrestleMania.
Covered by AJ! The phenomenal one does it!
Purest babyface Cody Rhodes kicks us off in a little interesting little discussion to begin with, where I thought we'd just be talking about Cody on the show, but in reality, it's been a weird turning of Cody Rhodes on social media. I mean, in terms of the fans turning against him in a way that is just absolutely nothing. It's story momentum, it's narrative momentum, where you need a period like this to create a norm to then jump off from. But some people have been reading that as, oh, well, Cody's nothing now. He's going to keep cutting his promos for the entire time. But no, they're establishing a new normal to then build off on top of. This is us basking in this moment. This moment, the whole point of it is this moment won't last forever. That's the entire point. But you've got to establish said moment to then make us sad when it's not there. Anyway, the actual promo was Cody repeating the tale of WrestleMania and Raw, setting up our six lads and their number one contenders matches for tonight to decide who Cody will face in Lyon at Backlash. Zoot alors! We've got this big American show, and it's not in any of the, like, I immediately think, well, I'd assume they would run in Paris. I'd assume they'd run somewhere else. Quite nice to see them run in Lyon. It's quite nice when they run in a non-major city. And obviously with Perth, it was because, if I'm right, Perth just offered the most money. My source is Trish and Sarah, so if you're wrong. Anyway, first match was, for the number one contenders matches, was LA Knight versus Bobby Lee Lashes versus Santos Escobar. I didn't think that much of the match. I've got notes on production. Like a great corner camera angle after the break. Santos's body masking Knight springing up onto the top rope instead of Lashes returning. I thought that was really well done. Right when Knight had Escobar lined up, in clobbered the Phantasmo henchman, attacking Bobby too. Brought out the Street Profits, faction schmoz, heating us up into the ending. Lashley's spear countered into the ring post by Escobar, only for his cocky taunting to be capitalised on with the BFT for the LA Knight victory. Not a lot to say here, but it does direct people into certain trajectories. Got LA Knight becoming a potential title guy. Does that count as an elevation? You got the hot run with Roman where he was never going to win, and this is him being heated up as a potential challenger. I guess establishes where he is in the lineup for SmackDown ahead of the draft. Because that is obviously going to be shaking things up. Just in terms of how, where people are in the hierarchy of the different shows, things are about to be completely changed up anyway, so it's keeping momentum going. But also it sets up Bobby Lashley and Santos Escobar starting their feud as he jumps from one big faction feud into another. The main event, though, was Kevin Owens vs. AJ Styles vs. Rey Mysterio. And this was pretty damn great, dear listeners. Pretty damn good. Just letting these three go in the main event resulted in a lovely telly banger. Plenty of the third man coming in to suddenly change the offense spots, be it Ray Ray springboarding to stop AJ, KO, German suplexing both lads, or Owens monkey flipping Ray into AJ, reverse into Arana, right into the 619 position. Just like, oh yeah, AJ Styles gets triple threats. Styles with the clash to Ray off Brett's rope onto a downed KO for the win. LA Knight vs. AJ Styles in the number one contenders match for next week. Really, really enjoyed it. The first one, you know, just not a lot to say about it, but established stuff. Whilst they just let the three lads go in the main event. Have fun, go at it. But LA Knight versus AJ Styles is set up with LA Knight then coming out at the end to go after him. There's the talk of AJ's contract potentially running out, so maybe puts out Cody on his way out. keeping the LA Knight towards the top of echelon of the upper mid card, but it also has AJ Styles in a position to put Cody Rhodes over with his new shit theme. My God, Death Rebel. The run is... I did see that apparently there's Death Rebel might be redoing some themes. It's just like, oh God, it's... And those become a bit of a meme for the Death Rebel themes at the moment, where they'll just say either their name or something associated with the brand and then it kicks into it. It's like, oh God, it's so... I think generic is the word. I was going to say formulaic, but it's both formulaic and generic, where they've not only was it already generic, but there's now a formula that you can pick out, so it's both. One is bad, but to be both formulaic and generic, that is... I've got it written down later in my notes in capital letters, but do not renew. Apparently the contract's for that to run out later this year. Do not renew. My God. Bloodline enter the arena to find their locker room is now for the undisputed WWE champion, setting up a shift in the lineup. A deflated Bloodline, no Roman, with his direction for his family to accept accountability. Heyman recounting events on behalf of Solo Sikoa and Jimmy Uso, but Solo's having none of the Weinsberg's attempted amping up. Solo wants consequences to losing. That means consequences need change. Solo setting his sights on Jimmy, hugging him and telling him he loves him. Aww, just like he learned from Roman to just love his family. When a hooded man attacks the Uso, it's Tama Tonga, jumps over from New Japan, gets a holy shit chant, which is interesting for a WWE, the modern WWE crowd to be doing that, to be giving a holy shit chant to Tama Tonga. I honestly wasn't expecting that big a reaction to him at all, but there was a holy shit chant. Graves immediately hyping him as the son of Haku. We've obviously, fans have just been reminded of Haku because of the Hall of Fame, and then he can bring in his son and it all ties up quite nicely. Spike after spike from Solo to Heyman's horror, Solo and Tama raising their wands, lines drawn as Sikoa stops the wise man from corning Roman and gets him to join them through fear. Chair in the corner for the hip charge, aka the ass in the face. Absolutely grounding Jimmy. Later in the show, Tama tells Heyman by orders of the tribal chief, and Heyman once again doing that quivering in fear, but this time he has got like no agency at all. He's got no agency in this, and that makes it just a nice different dynamic, which I think is kind of needed for the Bloodline. Like, maybe part of the reason that you get a holy shit from Tama Tonga is just because the Bloodline needed something. We needed new blood. It needed something to rejuvenate it, send it on an interesting character arc, to actually take it somewhere else rather than just having Solo and Jimmy bicker or lose a bit more, or have Roman be the proxy for Roman, to genuinely change the dynamic a bit, where Heyman doesn't really have much agency of these shots are being called. He's no longer the person who knows. He's not being trusted as the wise man. I think it's a nice little note. Like, Solo is the one who's been trusted to take this order out through Roman, not the wise man. But also, Tama Tonga is not the same. Because this is set up the interesting, because WWE, through WrestleMania, kind of made AEW the talking point. Then AEW, by showing the CM Punk stuff, made WWE their talking point. So over the course of the last week, both shows have been talking about the other show. And I'm perfectly fine with taking jabs at each other. That's absolutely fine. Believe in yourself. Believe in your product. Take jabs at the other one. That's all in good taste. It's absolutely fine. Like, nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But my point being, getting Tama Tonga is not on the same level as missing out on Ospreay, Okada, and Monet. They miss on all of them. And again, for Triple H to say what he did, knowing why, like the actual reason why Ospreay didn't sign for WWE, as in why he particularly might not want to do the grueling WWE schedule, and he could go somewhere else, make more money, and do less dates. Like, when he know the actual reality behind those decisions outside of wrestling, and to then make those comments anyway. And he could say, oh, he wasn't talking about Ospreay, but yeah, but you're also talking about Okada, whose wife lives in Japan, and Mercedes Monet, who is currently doing other things as well, so wants time to do other projects. Like, every single person had a legit reason to maybe not want to do that grueling schedule, like the crazy dates of the WWE stuff. Just phrase it as, oh, they just didn't want to do the grind, therefore they're not up for the task of being a WWE superstar. He was like, I mean, that's one way to look at it. Or, you know, there's a bit more depth to the go at it. Anyway, but the whole, really, social media's just been like a landscape to avoid, the best place to put it. I feel like it's since Triple H made those comments, it's invigorated the different fan bases to really start arguing against each other from their sides, and it's not really been fun for a long time anyway. But basically, I just recommend joining the Social Suplex Discord and getting away from it. The Bloodline segment, I generally thought it set up a lot of interesting stuff to possibly happen. Yeah, I think that's the point is, Tama Tonga is not like, oh my God, we've got Tama Tonga, holy shit. Like, no, you lost this negotiation war, it's fine. You had a white hot WrestleMania, this is your period to grace in. And Tama Tonga is an interesting story character beat to serve other characters. He's not the star. He's perfect to fit in the Bloodline storyline, but obviously, you know, keep it in check. Like, he's a good addition to the Bloodline roster. He's perfectly cast in this story. The way that he wrestles, the way that he holds himself, I feel like he's going to do really well in this story. He's going to be absolutely perfect. He's perfectly cast for the character. I don't want to start like booing Cody Rhodes for no reason. Just don't start booing Tama Tonga for absolutely no reason. He's not Okada. He's not Will Ospreay. He's still good. You don't have to boo him. I mean, boo him because he's a bad guy. Don't boo him because you're weird. Anyway, Bayley is also a new champion. A pure babyface champion promo, soaking in the applause and thanking the fans. When Tiffany Stratton is out to interrupt the champion, confused by Bayley issuing Naomi a challenge instead of openly giving Tiffy the time, Naomi out accepting to fight Stratton before the champion, which led us into straight Naomi versus Tiffany Stratton, a nice little bout getting Naomi her win back over the lass that beat her quick AF a wee little while back. Prettiest moonsault missed, Naomi bridging over into a roll-up for the win. It felt like this was going to be something that wasn't going to get a lot of time, but then the match between Naomi and Tiffany Stratton got more time than I was expecting. But that's because their first meeting got like 3 minutes, and then Tiffany won so quickly that it felt like it was something that would knock Naomi down the card. Naomi was somewhat wisely shifted into being built for the Bianca and Jade position in the tag team match, but that doesn't mean that for this Bayley feud she's not really got a lot of heat behind her, because the focus wasn't on her for those matches. She got some decent character building stuff, but the character building stuff was there to elevate other people's characters, like Bianca Belair. Belair was the real focus, but you needed to give Naomi some character for Bianca Belair to then bounce her character off when she was the main point. So by proxy, Naomi's got some character you can use. She's higher up the pecking order than Tiffany Stratton. You have a bit of TV time, you could heat her up for fans, but it's a backlash contender. She's absolutely fine. Absolutely fine backlash contender, whilst you're somewhat killing time before we get to the draft at the end of the month. Some other quick notes I just had on SmackDown. Obviously loved Kevin Owens directly saying he wanted to do a walking promo through the back and out onto the stage. Very, very Kevin Owens, just to outwardly say, hey, but everyone's been doing the really cool shots where they're like, the camera followed them as they walk out. Like, I want to do one of them. And then takes the microphone and just does it. But I'll make it out with another shit new theme, as I said earlier. Apparently, Death Ebel's contract with WWE runs out towards the end of the year. Please, dear God, do not renew. Please, another bad one. I can't remember if I mentioned it at the WrestleMania review, but yeah, that was another bad one for Bayley. Another bad theme. Speaking of themes, Tiffany Stratton's back to her NXT theme. Like, yep, her main roster theme was just as trash as the other new Death Rebel themes. For the love of God. Like, they can make some new themes, you know. Just, you know, like, as fans. As a professional contract, as people to be making themes of that level. Like, these are fan-made themes, which could get a little round of applause, but from a niche community. Not actually broadcast on a wide national scale for the show. Subpar. Oh no, was it mediocre? The new Smackers Tag Team Champions got a wee little VTR. Logan Paul also filmed his own little bit touting himself. Finally, before the main event, Jade Cargill and Bianca Belair got to run roughshod over Chelsea Green and Piper Niven. Squash matches are fun. Like, they're grand. End of notes. Moving on. As I read through my notes, I'm suddenly just reminded of the absolutely nothing arguments that happened over social media this week. It's like, yeah, the Cody Rhodes thing, nothing. Main event Tama Tonga argument, nothing. This argument here to do with the Jade Cargill, but like, oh, she's only been doing squash matches, I'm so excited for it. Nothing. So many arguments were just like, yeah, this is why I'm not on this app anymore. Like, I'm perfectly happy just existing in the Social Suplex Discord. We had a lovely conversation yesterday. I might need to apologise for temporarily hijacking Fish and Sarah's thread to just turn it into a wholesome, this is what we've seen kids having amazing reactions at shows. And it was so wholesome just having those people just post what their different reactions that they had seen at attending different shows and stuff. I was just like, it was lovely. Compare that to arguing over Jade Cargill having squash matches. What are these arguments? Like, what's going on here? But that's the end of SmackDown, a perfectly fine SmackDown after WrestleMania. Expectations were set after the Raw after Mania was so, 6 out of 10. It's shorter. It's a shorter 6 out of 10, so it automatically jumps up a score. It's because it's short. And it had a banging main event, which maybe for SmackDown you could get. I don't want to give it an 8. I want to say something like a 7. 7 out of 10. I might start rating these. I'm not normally very good with ratings. That's because I'm more of a vibe guy. Like, how was it? Oh, it felt as watchable, wasn't it? Anyway, that said, speaking of good vibes, I've not got a lot of good to say for the overall of Raw when I get to it. But when I'm talking about the main event, oh, this was such good Canadian vibes. Let's jump over to Monday Night Raw, Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Got an all-timer entrance for Sammy. The camera following Jey Uso out the arena after he escaped the Judgment Day through the crowd. Sammy stood outside, looking at the sign of the building, reminiscing on his first time there as a fan, really solidifying and grounding him to the area. The camera follows the Canadian inside, him amping up, shouting, "Olé, olé, olé," whilst holding a bin and throwing it about, high-fiving through the fans and out into the arena. Turning as he looks around so we can see his face on the camera as he takes the Montreal reception in, then taking the Canadian flag to charge through the crowd, that's when it cuts. All one shot, him turning around looking as he could get the depth and the feeling of being there in the crowd with Sammy. Or you can at least experience what Sammy's experiencing vicariously. Then he takes the flag from somebody. That's when we cut and he's charging down the steps with the Canadian flag. Just, it's a really good cut of momentum. This was cut really, really well. Even the stuff that Dunn did right and did quite well, he sometimes got the thing that he didn't know the reason why he would cut at that point for that reason thing. He knew to do it, but didn't understand why. And I just get the vibe with this production. They know exactly why to do a thing to either carry the momentum or the story that you're telling. Just adds a little bit to it. Under the Dunn production, I'd say the production was trying to tell its story, whilst this production is actively aiding the story that's already being performed. But yes, he's charging through the crowd like the hometown hero as they sing his theme back at him in response. Production on point to make it seem like he's in a sea of support as well. Then the match itself. Good God. Starting out on an amazing note. After initial respectful grapples before the break, a tweet ankle selling the danger of the ankle lock to come, whilst Gable's been dropped on his noggin, so his head's an orange damage for the Huluva kick. A solid match before its greatest moment after. I just want to give applause to the match itself. Really, really strong main event and did a really good job of elevating Gable into the position which he then snaps into with the aftermatch shenanigans. Sammy hugging his wife at ringside. Gable snaps and says, "Nah." German suplexing Sammy out of the hug to a top tier heat. So well done. And then putting in the ankle lock whilst tweaking Sammy over the top turnbuckle. Like, oh, it looks so good. And Sammy had been sending the ankle the entire match. He'd been limping, trying to hit those Huluva kicks. Gable with the orange damaged head. Then you've got Sammy with the red damaged ankle. and he sold that so much throughout the match. So then after this, where he's properly snapping into it. Some top tier heat. With the sentiment of the crappy Vince booking for Gable eroded away, all was set up so nicely for the heel turn to have some grounded snap and you have Sammy be the victim in his own hometown. He gave Sammy that hometown win, but then you had the heel viciously turn on him and properly hurt him. I thought it was really, really a great ending to the show, and it set Gable up amazingly to, as the Twitter immediately called it, setting him on his perk ankle run. It's go fuel Olympic gold medalist destroyer. It's my favourite version of Kurt Angle. We'll see, it's taken time to get him somewhat away from the crappy Vince booking. He's still got the Alpha Academy shine on him, but this story with Walter helps ground the character quite a lot. And then just using that and reiterating all of those points on the road to WrestleMania, once on build, just giving Gable all of that groundwork to then turn on. Rather than just mid-carder turns and you give him a push. Like, no. You do months of groundwork just to create that either support or make him feel like a grounded character. Can't applaud it enough. For the rest of the show, there's not really a lot to talk about, apart from the opening segment with Rhea Ripley, unfortunately. So Rhea Ripley, after 1 year, started to vacate her women's world title, a sucky arm injury the night after WrestleMania, a pissed-off Ripley directing her rage at Liv Morgan, a smart directing of the heat to at least use the injury to give some fire over to Liv. Cole reminding us that Liv Morgan herself has returned from Ripley taking her out months ago. Apparently, it was just a freak accident. Don't know how clear it is on the photos, but Liv, when she pushes Rhea Ripley to the wall, just the way she hits the wall. absolute freak accident. It's within that motion, something happens. And it's like, oh, that sucks, a freak injury. My go-to freak injury has just always been the Samoa Joe concussion, where filming an advert, he takes a table bump and gets a concussion from it, and then he's just gone for ages. It's like, oh, that just sucks. It's such bad luck. They have now got a vacant women's champion, and they said promoted towards the end of the show that they're going to be crowning a new women's world champion next week. So we'll see what happens there. In terms of like the Judgment Day and how this kind of played out, after the break, Judgment Day gave their love. The new world champion Damian Priest later in the show felt like he was taking Rey Ripley's lines for the Judgment Day amping up ahead of Dom taking on Andrade and Finn taking on Jey Uso. Priest stepping up to his number one contender Uso after the match with Balor, seemingly not being as on board for the faction assaulting on the Uso. So all of the beats that they were going to do, they were able to do anyway. Maybe just gave the amping up stuff to Damian Priest, which made sense of him being the world champion. Just the group was going to be going in a slightly new direction anyway, just lean a bit more into it. And then with what happened here, you would assume that the same stuff was going to happen anyway. The dynamic of Ripley isn't there, but you can still do all of the other beats. Like, it's not hindered what they were going to do too much, but obviously absolutely sucked for a champion who spent an entire year hyping and building up, and she's now have to drop the title, and she's going to be away for quite a few months. It's like, I had that. You could either heat Liv Morgan up and give her the title through this, or you could give it... There's quite a few options, actually. You've got the Becky Lynch option, you've got the big dominant heel option in Nia Jax, you've got the person who's been given the heat in Liv Morgan, but you can let that heat fester. I feel like whatever they do, it's got to be with the service of just letting that heat fester for Morgan. But yeah, sucks for Rey Ripley, absolutely sucks. Speaking of things that might, you know, in terms of the future, might suck. Triple H out again this time to introduce new belts. Just listen to Trish and Sarah just as they, in detail, just talk about why it's a choice. More ushering out of Vince times as the Trips era gets more of its own fancy new belts. The new tag team championships for the Awesome Truth. Just like the other titles on Raw, getting rid of the silly, well, you've got the blue ones and we've got the red ones. With the Roman gladiator shield heads. Like, it's insane that that design lasted as long as it did. That shit design, somehow. But these new tag team titles did fit the new name and design of the word titles for Raw, calling them the World Tag Team Championships. Truth, like, you can't fool me, Tommaso Ciampa. All building up to getting the Canadian crowd to chant, "Wee!" for the title switch, which led us into the number one contender World Tag Team Championship, DIY versus New Day versus Creed Brothers. Fun little three-team tag, DIY again booked to win as the capitalizing smart team as a little bit of consistency kicks in for them there. Kofi superplexed, but Woods flew in with the elbow, only for Ciampa and Gargano to charge in with the knees, snatching the win to become number one contenders for next week. Put that in line with a women's title match. Ciampa got Triple H chance. Everything R-Truth is doing is over with these crowds. This is what I mean by different crowds, different levels of evaluating the shows where... This kind of shit would not fly in AEW. In terms of what the fans go to the product for, they do silly stuff on AEW, but it's a different kind of silly. Whilst this brand of silliness is perfect for WWE and the kind of audience that they have. Well, I don't know, fested sounds a bit negative, but positively created, I guess. Also what helps is Vince isn't writing it anymore. So even though it's the same kind of character and the same... when I say kind of joke, it's the same... R-Truth is still the butt of the jokes in that same way, but meant to be laughing with Truth a lot more than you're meant to be laughing at him. So, and with the Vince kind of comedy, you were laughing at him a lot more than you were with him. But that's a slight inverse. The character's the same, but the way that the segments are produced is the direction of the laughter is just a bit different. The way they're designed is to get the support behind Truth rather than to laugh at him as an idiot. Are you laughing with him? Because we're all idiots. Sheamus' return versus Ivar was the final thing. Back with his old lobster head theme. Oh, I just remembered about another argument that was nothing. this was a stupid week. Me, where I just had a little chuckle and I feel like I somewhat positively talk about WWE, even if I'm like critiquing it on a negative level. I'd always try and maintain some form of like chirpy tone when I'm doing it. However, in terms of the discussions that were happening online around WWE and wrestling this week, this was a stupid week. This was such a stupid week. Because the other thing we talked about was Sheamus and his return. And there was some mocking of his body when he returned. And immediately I'm just like, that's not what an unfit body looks like. just no. That's not what an unfit body looks like. For me to know that, I just need to look into the mirror. But then I was shameless, like, yeah, he was absolutely ripped with an insane 8-pack, and he does have an absolutely incredible workout regime. That said, when you have neck surgery, but not just neck surgery, it's nerve surgery as well, you're going to be down for quite a period of time. Seamus was like, yeah, they gave me a call like a month earlier than I was expecting, so this is the shape I'm in a month out of when I was meant to be returning. I was like, you know what? Yeah, fair dues. You had neck nerve surgery. There's absolutely no way he could get into the shape he was meant to be getting into whilst recovering from that surgery. And the fact he's in this shape already is pretty impressive. This match was two big boys as Ivos trusted to give Shamu his returning big bruiser bashing. Springboard met with a knee, then a bro kick, now called the kneecap. Will I remember this? I don't like my chances. To set up a proper bro kick for the win. It was a return match. They gave him a lot more time to let Ivor get some kickings in, but to really get across. So just remind us of Sheamus' bruiser style. Other notes from Raw. Indi Hartwell finally starting to listen to her mentor and turning baddie with her against Ivy Nile and Maxine Dupri. Also, it may feel weird to put the undisputed WWE champion down here at the end of the show, but he's just continuing the post-WrestleMania feel-good tour as the other lads are built up, building that sentiment of the champion always being there. No need to turn him in, Twitter. No need to turn him in. You weirdos, stop being weird. That's all it's doing, just laying that groundwork, creating a new normal to then springboard off and do something with. You got to establish it first before you then rush ahead and do something. That's all they're doing. They've told you what's going to be coming, whilst also just laying the groundwork. But that was Monday Night Raw and SmackDown. That's maybe not a bad way just to sum up what's been happening on Raw and SmackDown since WrestleMania. Just laying the groundwork for stuff to then springboard elsewhere. Like even the Sami Zayn versus Chad Gable match, which is easily the match of the week. To be fair, I did really enjoy the triple threat, but it wasn't given the time to elevate as Sami Chad Gable was. But with Sami Chad Gable, that was a hot match, but it was still laying down the groundwork for where we're going to be going over the course of this summer with the Chad Gable setup, with the Sami Zayn as the hero to be set in that manner. It's a lot of groundwork setting for where we're going to be going rather than just going there immediately. Or isn't it hot to be doing this? And when I watch AEW, I just realised that we are just at very different periods. During WrestleMania times, AEW was still in that setting up period as they were getting towards Dynasty. But AEW Dynasty is this weekend. They're in that final week where, okay, the card's happening now. So you get a very, very different vibe when you watch two shows where one is starting to lay the groundwork for their long summer, whilst AEW is getting towards the end of theirs. They've got AEW Dynasty with some hot matches, but also they're closer to Double or Nothing than WWE are to SummerSlam. So in terms of yearly schedule momentum, AEW are about to hit a hot period as they close in towards Double or Nothing, whilst WWE will be in a building period. And I won't be surprised to see how sentiments start to change around the next month or so. It's going to be a swing back and forth. It's just in terms of like where you are momentum-wise in building your... get that hype going for the pay-per-view, because you want to be at your hottest right before the pay-per-view. And obviously WWE in building phase now, and AEW are about to hit their next period of really hyping up for Double or Nothing. Won't be massively surprised if AEW start getting a lot more positive talking stuff, if the arguments on social media start to swing. But again, I'm not on social media anywhere near as much. So join the social Discord. I've plugged it too much in this episode. Anyway, with that done, this recording is like an hour shorter than my WrestleMania one from last week. So I hope you did enjoy the WrestleMania show from last week. It was like a 90-minute recording, like legit. I know it came out 58 minutes. But going hard on it with the cut that. But yes, back to the normal 30 minutes banging them out of here. You got your WrestleMania special. I might do a special for like the bigger shows later on. That maybe you get a special for SummerSlam and for All In. Oh, I might do an All In one actually, because I'm English. I went last year. It'd be pretty cool just to watch it as a fan at home on TV this week, because I can't go this year. So I might slowly over the course of the week put together like a longer review. Anyway, with that said, there's no need to panic. And maybe, like, you know, slow down the silly arguments, but that's not how social media works, especially since Musk took the cap off of the weirdos. Anyway, I'll be back this time next week. So with that, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciate it. Never take it for granted. I'll be back next week. Let's hope for a normal one. See how it goes. Anyway, with that, I bid you adieu. Adios.